You're on Against the Grain with Teo, Mr. Ceasefire Hardiman, and Raza Siddiqui. Teo is actually up in Kenosha, Wisconsin this week, so I'm holding down the fort. He is doing the important work that needs to be done in the city. He's training violence interrupters up in Kenosha County. We applaud the effort he's doing. If you kept up with the news overnight, there's, again, difficult news coming out of Chicago, which we are keeping an eye on. Multiple shootings, something in the order of 40 this weekend. So, again, the work that Teo is doing is important, and we applaud that he's doing that. We're going to actually take a little bit of a step back and look across the Des Plaines River into DuPage County. We're going to take like a little step back from what we normally do. But I do want to talk about Teo held it down for me last week when I was in Texas. That's something that's been a hot topic that we're going to talk about. My wife, Sarah, said that, and I actually had the opportunity to go into the State House in Texas the day that the Democratic lawmakers actually took off and left the state in order not to take a vote. So I know that's something that's going to be on the minds and hearts of a lot of people. So that's something we're going to discuss as well. But right now, let me introduce to you my two guests. We have DuPage County Board Member from District 3, right?
Correct.
Greg Hart, who's joining us, and Ginger Wheeler, who is from It's a Mouthful. So say it for us, Ginger. What's the organization?
The Friends of the East Branch DuPage River Trail.
Did you get that? Because I know I didn't. You can call in and you can talk more with both of our guests as we continue. The number is 773-763-9278. Ginger, tell us a little about what the organization's about. And first, I'm going to preface it with this. Sometimes we learn that government takes a while to work, right? They decide that something's worth putting on the docket, exploring. Sometimes it takes a bit of time. Sometimes it takes a bit of public participation. Something's been going on since the 1980s that you've revived. Tell us about that.
Okay, thank you. First of all, it's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
We're thrilled to have you,
Raza. It's really great. So the East Branch DuPage River Trail is a planned 30-mile trail that would bisect DuPage County north to south in the center part of the county. It was first envisioned back in the, I believe, around the 1980s, and the East Branch Trail would then follow the East Branch of the DuPage River. I knew about this a long time ago, back in the 1990s, and I always thought it would be a really great idea. It's by my house, and it would connect a lot. We have a wonderful trail network in DuPage County, but a lot
Ginger,
of...
let me ask you something real quick, yeah, and pardon the interruption, but I do that
okay.
A lot. That's just kind of my thing. So I went, like I said, to Texas. I saw San Antonio. I saw how they made a whole river walk, how they used they tapped the potential of the natural river. Now, we have a lot of areas within DuPage County where these rivers go, and they're not really... There's no real way to appreciate them. Is that correct? There's no real way to...
Go alongside
of them.
Well, this one for sure, yeah.
So is this something that you hope to change with this project?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so 1980, DuPage County decided this was a good idea. They said, let's do this, and then nothing else happened for a little bit.
Well, they put it in their comprehensive plan, okay, and then it's in an unincorporated area between Glen Ellen and Lombard. So it goes north-south between the two suburbs. And so both Glen Ellen and Lombard have put it in their comprehensive plans as well.
Okay.
Just because it's in a comprehensive plan doesn't mean it's a done deal. It just means, hey, this is kind of a cool idea, and a lot of people thought it was neat, and let's put it in there and something we can work for.
Sometimes public participation really is needed to get something to get from what is considered a good idea to really into motion, right? There have been people like yourself who have participated and gotten this going?
Yes. Well, over the years, there have been numbers of people that have worked on it. And DuPage County has built bits and pieces of it here and there, but it's not all done, and it's not all connected. So back in 2014, I was getting out and writing. I had more free time. My kids were out of the nest. I was able to explore more of our east-west trail network. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking, wow, it'd be really nice if I could get from the Illinois Prairie Path to the Great Western Trail. They run parallel to each other.
I'm going to take a moment just to explain that. So if you are not from the western suburbs, these are trails that used to be train tracks, right?
Right.
These were actual working
train tracks. They're abandoned trail lines, railroad lines.
And so I guess it was easier to kind of make that transition. This is going to require more intergovernmental working together, cooperation, correct?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So the land that this projected trail sits on is not private property. It's all pretty much quasi-public property, but it's owned by a lot of different jurisdictions. So it includes sort of unincorporated Glen Ellen and unincorporated Lombard and Forest Preserve and DuPage County Forest Preserve and some parks. And then there's ComEd and IDOT, the Illinois Department of Transportation, mm-hmm. has to get involved because it would cross some of their roads that they govern, as well as like things like Glenbard Wastewater. And things like that, you know.
All these little governmental agencies that you don't even sometimes hear about.
Right.
And I want to hear about the challenges of working together. Commissioner, I don't know. Is it Commissioner? Is that a good way to address
you? Call me Greg. Greg is
Greg. I'll call you Greg then. But he's the District 3 Commissioner for DuPage County, if you're just joining us. I'd like to bring you in on this. You actually handle DuPage County. You're one of the commissioners there.
Yes.
What is it like to have this intergovernmental corporation? Do you participate in that, or do you leave that to Ginger?
No, I absolutely participate in it, and that's part of the reason why I'm here today. I'm so thankful for all the work that Ginger and her group have put into this important issue. When I first wanted to run for commissioner, one of the reasons was I understand and appreciate all the 94 miles of trail that exists in DuPage County. But how incredible would it be to have a trail connect the north and the south ends of the county? It's good from an economic standpoint, it's good from an environmental standpoint, it's good from a health standpoint. And there's very few issues that thread the needle between those three issues, and that's why I'm fully supportive. And one of the things that I'm planning to do is continue to participate with all of the stakeholders and drive consensus to make this a reality.
As we get out of the pandemic, one of the health crises that have kind of faced us is obesity, being sedentary lifestyles. Here's a good opportunity to get into actually, everyone's saying, go outside, do something. This is providing an activity. Does that excite you, Greg?
It does. And I think if you look at the last year that we had, and everyone understands it was a terrible year, but one of the things that I think is a positive silver lining that came out of it was we had record attendance and record usage of our trails and our forest preserves. And I think that's something that I would like to see continue. We have excellent resources here in DuPage County. It's one of the reasons so many people want to move to the county. We're only one of five counties that grew in the whole state of Illinois this last 10 years, according to census data. And I think a big part of that is because of our environmental resources that we have.
Absolutely. We want to talk a little bit more about that. If you're just joining us, we're focusing a little bit more on DuPage County this week, although we have callers coming in that I'm sure will take us back to any which way we want to go in our nine-county listening area. You can call us in 773-763-9278. Let's see who I want to go with first here. Let's go with Mitchell from Des Plaines. You're on Against the Grain.
Hey, good afternoon. I wanted to just discuss and bring up some observations regards to the Delta variant and obviously COVID-19 and what's being played out right now.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, the biggest problem that I have is people in media practicing yellow journalism. So what I mean by that is this, on this, not your show. Your show I like a lot. There's a lot of credibility.
But thank you. We like you, too.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But the bottom line is this, right? Regarding COVID-19 and the Delta variant, you know, the thing that you want to keep in mind is this. For the non-asthmatics, okay, they're getting symptoms, okay? So COVID is basically it's a respiratory disease that attacks the lungs. That's a fact. So instead of basically being open-minded to other pharmaceuticals, by the way, hydroxychloroquine, okay, its efficacy is only basically what I call fulfilled when it's combined with erythromycin, which is the Z-Pak, and high doses of zinc. Yet on this station, you have people that were pharmaceutically shaming hydroxychloroquine, who has the temerity because they don't know what they're talking about. In order, the efficacy of hydroxychloroquine has to be combined with the erythromycin, which is the Z-Pak, and high doses of zinc. Because it takes off what I call the symptoms. Now, for the non-asthmatics, what happens is when COVID attacks their lungs, what happens is it's like basically having blankets put onto your chest. Now, I've been a lifelong asthmatic, and the irony of my life is that when I graduated college, my first job was in Illinois as a pharmaceutical sales rep selling asthma and inhaled steroids.
Mitchell, I'm going to take a step back and do what my partner Tio would do right here and talk about what are some of the solutions that we could offer. What are some of the solutions that you have offered when you've called into the show?
Yes. Okay, first of all, basically when I felt the first point of view of attack, I would basically get on an inhaled steroid, folks. It's called budesonide, okay? Or there's other, what I call single products of inhaled steroids that have zero systemic absorption. And the reason why you want to go to the inhaled steroid is because if you take, for example, corticosteroids or oral steroids, there's what I call serious side effects. You get the
Hey, Mitchell, this is getting a little over my head, so I'm going to rein it back a little bit. And let's talk about the secondary. Now that we're kind of coming out of this a little bit and they're encouraging people to do what they need to but then get out there, what do you think of that? I mean, does that make you nervous, or are you thinking that that people are going to heed this advice? Because we do have those two health crises that we talked about earlier, right? We have what we're coming out of, hopefully, COVID, but then we also have the kind of health crisis with people who are now, you know, sedentary lifestyle for the last year and a half. You have people who are trying to get back into the motion, into things. What do you think about that? What do you advise people?
First of all, you got to treat aggressively, because the bottom line is that what I would do if you're either an asthmatic or especially a non-asthmatic is that I would take high doses of zinc. I would take high doses of vitamin C daily in conjunction with getting on a nebulizer of budesonide, because I'll tell you that right now, nobody knows what's in these vaccines. Strike one. Strike two, the media is not reporting those what I call side effects. Now, the bottom line is this.
Mitchell, we got a couple other calls coming in at 773-763-9278. As always, we advise you consult with your doctor before making any sort of decisions onto your supplements or vitamin regimen. Mitchell, we are going to cut out now. We got Jim calling in from – Jim, are you in Cuba this week? And Jim may or may not be in Cuba. That's Jim from South Elgin. You with us on Against the Grain?
How are you?
Hey, doing well.
I was calling about the Cuban thing, but with your guest calling about those railroad tracks, those decommissioned tracks.
Yes. Well, actually,
well,
they're talking about trails. They're talking about DuPage County connecting,
right,
making interconnectivity within trails, kind of east, north-south, kind of something I always hope Metro would do. You know what I mean? There's a lot of ways to get in the city, but not a lot of ways to go north and south. What you got, Jim? Because I know you are somewhat in that region that I'm talking about.
Yeah, I live in western Elgin along Randall Road. Actually, Randall Road runs pretty good, and Route 47 has had some development on it as well. But I'll just say about these decommissioned tracks, it's really a great thing to do because, for example, up in northern Wisconsin and up in the UP and Michigan, those are wonderful snowmobile trails when you're riding a sled during wintertime.
Those are.
They're straight. They're free of obstacles. I mean, it's really cool. So that's a good idea to put those to good use.
Thank you.
They do. Am I mistaken?
That's a great thing to hear.
Am I mistaken that they do have trails like that kind of in your neck of the woods as well, if I remember correct? Go ahead, Jim.
Well, when I bought my home here in Elgin, there were some snowmobile trails that were listed here just going through some of the farm fields, but there's so little snow during wintertime, they're really not effective at all. But as far as these decommissioned train lines, that's really a great idea.
Ginger, let me ask you this. Is there any potential for snowmobile trails on any of these, or are you keeping it purely pedestrian bike? Because I'll tell you, after a year and a half stuck with my wife and kids, I wouldn't mind getting on a snowmobile and just going north.
It's my understanding in DuPage County that the trails are, motorized vehicles are not allowed on the trails.
Ooh.
Yeah.
But, right.
But
well,
like he said,
that. In the wintertime,
they don't get enough snow anyways, usually. So.
But that being said,
when they do, let it happen.
Yeah, well, and that being said, to the caller's point, these trails aren't only accessible in the summer months. I mean,
right,
that's one of the most important things to recognize when we talk about building new trails. It's a year-round hobby that someone could take to get exercise using the trails and spotting wildlife, et cetera. So
that's a good point. And I actually cross-country ski on the trails in the winter.
Really?
Yeah.
But you know what else these trails do? Is like if there's enough snow, people take sleds and they'll go in groups and go from one restaurant to another and get something to eat, have a drink or two, and go. So that helps create business for local establishments. So that should be encouraged.
Definitely does.
Is that in the long-term plan? Like, do any of these, Jim, stay on the line with us for a little bit. Does that provide any potential for restaurants out there, or is it purely too much off the roadway to do anything like that?
No, absolutely. These trails connect business centers all around DuPage County. There's a couple of new restaurants in Villa Park that are right on the Illinois Prairie Path that are packed all the time.
Fantastic. Greg, tell us what brought you into this. Like, you are not too new, but relatively new to the board. Yes. And this seems like something you are passionate and excited about. And I just want to get into, you talked about the environmental, the climate kind of conditions.
Yeah.
But what brought you personally an interest in this, thinking that, you know, this is something I'd like to back and support?
Well, I would say there's a couple of things. First and foremost, if you look at what new residents are seeking out when it comes to a place to live, outdoor spaces and trails and green spaces are at the top of this list. One of the things that I've cared deeply about since I've joined the county board is making DuPage an attractive place to live, work, raise a family. And especially if you look at millennial residents that are moving to DuPage, this is something that they care deeply about. And I think if we want to continue to be the attractive county that we are, that's growing in population, this is one of the best ways to do it in a way that's beneficial for the economy and for the health of our community. Secondarily, just this past year alone, not that that was the first time I've used our forest preserves or used our trails, but my family and I, like many others, have gotten a lot of use out of them originally. And that's why I want to be a partner to Ginger in what her and her team are working on, because I think it would really drive a lot of value for everyone.
Now, I know Village Trustee Sarah Sadat, who, disclaimer, is my wife, and a couple trustees out there are trying to do something very similar in Lyle. And what they found is all that intergovernmental work that needs to be done to make sure, say, ComEd is on board, IDOT is on board. Ginger, what has been the most challenging part about this? You seem, and I'm just going to put cards on the table. Ginger is a very, persistent person. She said, I want to be on your show. I said, well, you know, this is what we deal with. But she made her case. And I imagine you're making your case a lot with these different governmental bodies in terms of what they need to do to make your vision, and this vision that has been on the docket since 1980s, a reality. Tell us about that. What is it like to have to work with these governments?
Oh, well, most of these government officials that we talk to as advocates, as citizens, are very receptive.
Sure.
They want to hear from citizens. They're eager to know what we think and what we're interested in. And all along the board, everybody that I've talked to about this project has been extremely positive and extremely interested in making it a reality. From the top leadership in the county, Dan Cronin, who's the chairman right now, he's been very, very supportive all the way to, you know, park districts even. Just everybody's really on board with this particular project. And it would go into Lyle eventually once they connect it, although that's not the part we're working on right now.
You have plans to try to bridge it to the Morton Arboretum, correct? Is that currently in
right
the phase
now,
you're going?
They're working on a segment of it between the Great Western Trail to the Illinois Prairie Path that would connect north to south in our part. Like I said, it would be just a little bit west of 355, and then eventually to Butterfield. And then the next step is to figure out how to get across Butterfield Road and into Hidden Lake Forest Preserve. And then that's right next to and abuts the Morton Arboretum. Mm-hmm. But yeah, riding a bike to the Morton Arboretum right now is not a good idea. It's very dangerous. You're on a big, busy highway.
Well, and this would help increase safety. And to the point that I think we were just both making, there's very few issues you can see in this day and age that garner support from both sides of the aisle to the extent that this one does. And if that's the case, which I think Ginger would agree that is the case,
absolutely,
we can drive consensus on this issue today. We might as well make it happen.
Well, fantastic. On that note, we'll go to commercial break, but we're going to come back where there's a little bit more of a divide between the partisan lines, perhaps. We're going to talk a little bit about elections are coming up in DuPage County, where for the first time, like all the commissioners, right, all the commissioners are up for re-election at the same time.
Yep.
DuPage County, for all of our listeners who may or may not be aware, has traditionally been a very red county, which is transitioned to purple, and now it's predominantly a blue county. This could be changed. We'll talk about that a little bit when we come back. We will also get to our callers, Norbert, Libby, Debbie. We'll be back to you right after these commercial break.
Megan Financial is an independent retirement and financial services firm dedicated to the working men and women of organized labor. Megan provides straightforward, custom-fit financial advice and specializes in defined benefit and defined contribution pension plans, as well as participant and retiree health and welfare benefits. Megan Financial has the knowledge and experience to navigate the union member through all phases of life. Call 708-444-1090.
Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, a broker-dealer and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Office location at 5321 South 94th Avenue, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462.
33 Realty is a fully integrated real estate services firm specializing in investment brokerage, property management, leasing, distressed real estate services, and construction services via its sister company, Cubed Construction, for a variety of asset classes across the multifamily and commercial real estate sectors. 33 Realty provides full-service solutions to complex real estate assignments with industry-leading staff invested in the process. For more information, please visit 33realty.com. 33 Realty, your foundation for real estate success.
Against the grain, you're on with the Raza Siddiqui, Teo Hardiman, who today is up in Kenosha County continuing the very important work that he is known to do, which is serve as a violence interrupter and train new people to become the frontline people on the street to intercede and try to create a safer environment. If you watch the news, you know that this weekend was no different from any other weekend where we're on talking about some of the gun violence statistics. It's unfortunate, but Teo and people like him are out there doing the work, which we're very grateful for. Today we are shifting topics a little, but please do feel free to call in and weigh in on any of the topics we have. We're talking about the Texas lawmakers, for instance. We also, as always, have multiple topics we're discussing. Today, however, we are talking about an initiative that really depends on intergovernmental cooperation, which is happening out in DuPage County. It could serve a very important basis for anyone who wants to get more involved with local government. Greg, we're going to talk to you a little about that. You talk about how more and more people have been able to get involved because of remote access. We'll talk about that a little bit. We're on with Ginger with the East Branch DuPage River Trail. If you haven't heard of it yet, you'll be an expert by the end of this show. Greg Hart, DuPage County Commissioner, tell us a little about this. How has the shift been since people have been able to participate remotely? It's interesting that that's happening at the county level. I know it's happened at the union. I had motioned for our members to be able to participate remotely because it was necessitated, right? You kind of had to do it. But have you noticed that this has increased the amount of participation in county government?
I have. I have. And it's increased it so much that one of my colleagues, Ashley Selman from District 1, and I have worked in an ad hoc rules committee to find a way to make public participation through remote channels permanent. I think it's good for civic engagement. You know, the times of our meetings, 10 a.m. on a Tuesday, not very conducive for individuals who are working and trying to provide for their families to come take time out of their day to come to the county board.
Sure.
I think it drives more participation. It actually, I think, would increase the diversity of our board if we actually allowed more remote participation, not just from the public comment standpoint, but also from a board member standpoint. So we did see that shift in COVID, and I'm hoping it continues.
Let me ask you this. How have you been able to publicize or bring it to the attention of the residents of the county that this is now an option? Because culturally speaking, this has not been an alternative for them. So how have you been able to say, hey, you now have this option to be engaged in a very important issue? Because I'm sure DuPage County, like every other county, had its share of challenges with COVID.
Absolutely. Well, we've posted it on our website, and that will drive some increased awareness just through being publicly available. We talk about it at every board meeting to the extent that those meetings are streamed, and they are every day. I'm not sure how many people watch our board meetings religiously every week, but we're doing all our best to get the word out and
create controversy. That's how we do it.
Exactly.
That'll get your numbers
up. I will say we are limited to 30 minutes total for public participation, but it's very important to me that that participation can come from both remote and in-person options.
Fantastic. I also want to get into, but we have a couple callers, so I'm going to get to a couple callers. At some point, we're going to talk about how every board or every seat in DuPage County is up for election,
yes,
which is really going to determine what the direction is going forward. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Let's get first to Norbert, who's talking about the bike paths. Norbert from Naperville, the frequent caller. How can we assist you with your question today?
Hey, Ron, it's great to talk to you again. I'm actually out on my bike on the west branch of the DuPage River, and it's a tremendous asset, especially during the COVID. There's more people in downtown Naperville today than on the bike trail, but last year at this time, it was opposite. There was a bike trail with loaded with people out getting fresh air into their lungs, and even kids taking advantage, cooling off in the river. So I'm 100%. East Branch Trail would be awesome. I could ride. Right now, it's really dangerous for me to ride to downtown Lyle from the Green Valley Forest Reserve. I don't do it. I would love to do it, And so actually my destination is downtown Naperville. And I used to, when I worked in the loop, I took the bike to the train station. And it saved a tremendous amount of hassle parking to be able to ride my bike to the train station. So to get, and that's another thing. I can't get to the Lyle train station by bike. Because the route is simply just too dangerous.
Norbert, my wife is going to kill me for saying this, being a Lyle trustee, but I will say this. For a village that touts being the Arboretum Village, it is excessively dangerous to get there if you're a pedestrian or a biker. I know one time my daughter and I tried to walk, and you had to go past two on-ramps, and one of the Lyle police officers, best police force as far as I'm concerned, looked at me almost like, you know, you do that at your own peril. I'm washing my hands of what I'm seeing right here. So I will tell you this. There is always room for improvement. It sounds like, Ginger, you have got that wheel kind of turning. Again, Naperville, not too far from Lyle, but if you're a pedestrian or a biker, not as friendly as you'd see in the city in terms of getting from one place to the other. I mean, we have Norbert calling while he's on a bike, which I don't know if that's the safest thing, Norbert. We'll get into that later. But, Ginger,
I'm on the trail, and it's very safe. It goes under 75th Street. I do have to cross Hobson, but that's a pretty safer intersection than going under 75th Street. And the trail also goes under Ogden, so you're avoiding. I could go from our house in Southeast Naperville on the trails all the way to the Illinois Prairie Path and all the way to the Great Western Trail.
So there are alternatives. But how can we?
Where he is pretty far away from this trail. I mean, eventually the East Branch DuPage River Trail would connect, because he's talking about the West Branch, which is probably a good 8 miles west. Mm-hmm. And the West Branch Trail is amazing, and we would like something like that for the East Branch Trail, which would be more in the central part of DuPage County. So he's right. It's great, and that's why we want to have one, too.
We were talking about this before, and I'm going to ask again. This is going to be an expensive project. This is not something that's going to be very simple. Does the idea of, a user-based fee end up coming into play? Because, again, this is going to cost a lot of revenues, and I can see a lot of taxpayers being like, well, we're not going to use this. Are we going to pay for this?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that question, Raza, because the answer is we've already paid for it. We've paid for it over the last 40 years. Every time you send dollars to Washington, D.C. or the state of Illinois, some of it gets put into transportation budgets. Transportation is where trail budgets come from. They're considered roadways like any road. So then it's a matter of priority of saying, well, we're going to take a little tiny percentage of these billion-dollar transportation budgets and allocate them towards recreational trails so that our residents have healthy alternatives, healthy, safe, and environmentally friendly alternatives for transportation that don't involve automobiles and roadways. So the answer is there's no user fees because we've already paid for it. It's just a matter of writing grants and getting that money to come back so that we can enjoy the fruits of our tax dollars that have already been spent.
And just to add to what Ginger said, not to cut in, but that's why the importance of engaging with your local, state, and federal elected officials is critical. Awareness, I would say, is 80% of the challenge. And 80% of the people would probably be in favor of this type of a project, but it's just getting it on the radar of our Congress people, our state legislators, and of course at the county board level.
So awareness, that's an important thing. I was actually talking to a couple of people who are very politically involved on a local level from both sides. And after our conversation, Greg, I had mentioned to them, hey, did you know that every seat in DuPage County is up for election? And these guys, who I consider pretty knowledgeable, a couple of them were like, no, I had no idea. Yeah. Tell us about that, because I imagine that's more of a contentious subject right now.
Well, and we're working through it. So like every government body, we were affected and are affected by the census numbers that was conducted in 2020. And while we're still awaiting the federal government to provide the final numbers, DuPage County's legislative districts, as well as its county board districts, will be impacted as a result of that census data. Right now, because our population remained only slightly increased, I wouldn't foresee that there being that many changes. But one thing that is going to change is that every single county board member, county commissioner, and forest preserve commissioner will be up for election in 2022. So that's all 18 for the county board and all 6 for the forest preserve. So it will definitely impact the makeup of the board. Obviously, we have to wait and see what the voters decide in a little over a year. But that's what's happening in 2022.
So I didn't quite understand this, being that it was staggered terms, but there are 4-year and 2-year terms. And it's just coincidental that they're all coming up, or it's because of
the census? That's because of the census. So what happens is that everyone who seeks office for a county board seat, for example, this coming election year in 2022, will run. Okay. When the individuals who are elected, 3 from each district, are decided by the voters, then the county clerk will literally have a random drawing to decide which of the 3 from each district receives a 4-year term and who is the person that receives a 2-year term. And from that matter, it will go from that way. Not the most uncomplicated process, but a lot of things in government are tricky.
And that does present a problem for the advocates, because when you get newly elected members in there, then it's up to the advocates to educate them on what's happened and what we've been working on.
Because I'm sure you've built a relationship over the years with certain people who mm-hmm. have a knowledge intimately of what you're trying to do. Now you have to bring people up to speed, and you don't know the personality necessarily. Someone mm-hmm. might be like, I'm very against trails that lead to healthy lifestyles.
No one's against trails.
So actually, there are a couple of questions, a couple of topics that we can discuss, and you can weigh in. 773-763-9278, 773-763-9278. I'm very curious about the makeup up at DuPage County going forward, but I know we're going to stick to trails at least for a little bit. Maybe we'll have a caller that brings us back to the other subject. Let's go to Libby from Lombard. I know that you have some questions regarding the trail project. Libby, you're on Against the Grain.
Hi. Yes, I am. I work with Ginger in the Friends of the East Branch Trail organization.
Hi, Libby.
And I just wanted to bring up that there are so many options for funding right now for the trails. And I wanted to ask, too, what you think about the timeline regarding getting some of those grant funding and how quickly this project can get done, because there is seemingly such a consensus from the community, and there's tons of support. So considering the different funding opportunities, how long could it take to get the project built?
That's a great question. I would love to know the answer myself. Someone asked us yesterday, we were at the Intelligentsia Cup bike races in Glen Ellen, and they're going to happen again on Tuesday in Lombard.
Okay.
And somebody came up to us and asked us, how many signatures do you need before you get this trail done? And because what we do is we are all about advocating and asking people to sign our petition at eastbranchtrail.org. And Libby looked at that person and said, all of them? We don't know the answer to that. We don't really know, but DuPage County has a population of close to 1 million people. So we're kind of shooting for 20,000 signatures. That would be amazing if we could get that many. I think that could be a real critical mass.
Yeah, no.
I mean, we have close to 4,000 or 5,000 right now, which is amazing.
A hard feat to achieve in its own right, which is great. And that speaks to the desire to have this type of a project. And, you know, look, as far as the time frame to get it done, I think this is why the importance of advocacy matters and stakeholders who are willing to work with it. And I know across the public and private and nonprofit sectors, there are stakeholders who are committed to this project. And I think we have a prime opportunity in the next couple of years, given the focus on infrastructure coming out of Washington. So I'm hopeful that opens some opportunities that allows us to move a little bit faster.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about that, too.
Sure.
But Greg, I do want to ask you this. Is there a certain amount that should sign a petition for the county to take it more seriously, or is it very dependent on the issue? Like, what is the magic number when it comes to something like that?
I don't think in terms of the signatures, there isn't a magic number, because Ginger's done such a great job informing our county board already. I think there's a good amount of awareness, obviously, with any election. To Ginger's point, that will require some education. But having 5,000 signatures on an initiative like this is something that we don't take lightly. And especially anyone that comes and presents a public comment, whether it's in person or remotely, we take very seriously. I can't speak for every single board member, but I know I read the comments submitted, and I listen intently whenever I hear something brought up. And it's our jobs to take it seriously if it's brought up from one of our constituents.
That sounds good. We got Roosevelt waiting for us. Roosevelt, I see he, you know what? I'll let you talk for yourself. Roosevelt, you're on Against the Grain.
Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Sorry for the wait, but we got very important topics today. So right to you, Roosevelt.
I'm going to change the subject for just a little bit since you mentioned you just came back from Texas, right?
That's it.
Okay. Were you there when they just had the shooting about 3 days ago?
I was not. I was back in town here.
Okay. So my question to you and to anybody out there, I believe Texas has the most lax laws when it comes down to carrying guns. So how come that's not working for them as far as, because they've always said that when you arm everybody, you know, it's going to cut down the shootings. Do you know that Texas has had 20 shootings this year? I mean, this last one about 3 days ago was not like one of 10 or one of five. It's been 20 times that this has happened in Texas. So how come that's not working in Texas, the fact that everybody's armed to the teeth? And then when it comes down to the laws, when it comes down to voting, they are concentrating more on trying to get minorities not to vote in Texas because of your last election was so close when it comes down to, and you were mentioning how DuPage County is turning, blue, and I believe Texas is going to, the same thing's going to happen. So I wanted to talk about the shootings, and then I also wanted to talk about the COVID. When it comes down to COVID and the Delta, do you agree, because this is just my opinion, based on what I've heard as specialists, when it comes down to COVID, Trump was responsible for more than 400,000 deaths. And that's not Roosevelt talking. That's one of Trump's own doctors, specialists, Deborah Burks, I believe his last name is. So in my opinion, when it comes down to this Delta variant, Trump is responsible because of the lack of action that he didn't take when he knew all along that it was contagious and it was spreading like wildfire. So that's my opinion, based on facts again, not me talking, just other people talking. And in closing, I'm going to say this. When it comes down to the variant, when it comes down to COVID, are you going to listen to somebody that's the specialist, or are you going to listen to some idiot that lost two elections, was impeached twice, and claimed to know more by suggesting that we should inject ourselves with chloroquine and take shots of bleach.
So, Roosevelt, I'll tell you what I'll do here. I created a little outline to follow your train of thought here. Your first question was about Texas gun violence there, saying that it had some of the most lax laws with gun control, which I don't believe it's true. Significantly less, I'm sure, than Illinois, as I'm sure both you and I, Roosevelt, agree. But the when you look at some of the southwest region of the country, you can actually make the case that Texas does not have the strongest regulation on that. That being stated, I don't know about the shooting there, but I think it would be unfair to put any sort of shooting like that on any specific policy. I mean, do you find that there that you believe it's a trend in Texas? Is that where you're going with that?
Well, where I was going with that, Roger, is the fact that they claim that we're always the example when it comes down to the news and shootings. When it comes down to Fox News, they always report about Chicago, and they never report about shootings that happen in, quote, red states, such as Texas and Florida. Come to think of it, Florida has had some shootings, too. What I was getting at is because there's so many...
Because I remember hearing about some of those other shootings as well. I don't believe it's as much almost a public health crisis as it is in Chicago, where if you look at this weekend alone, right, Roosevelt, as I'm sure you also have kept up on, 40-plus shootings, including we are talking about 4-plus shootings of at least three or four shootings of teenage girls in the city on the west side in the Austin neighborhood. I mean, I would think that would warrant some media coverage, correct?
No, I agree with you. But here's my point. Texas is not surrounded by states that also have lax laws when it comes down to guns. Our problem is the same problem as Texas. Maybe I'm not explaining that right. Our problem is the same problem that Texas has. Too many guns out there, whether legally or illegally. And you know that when it comes down to shootings, it's always the guns. And none of these people that are supported by the NRA want to do anything about it, such as the governor of Texas and the governor of Florida. They are in the pockets. We just had a president that was in the pocket of the NRA. He hugged the guy right after the shooting in Parkland in Florida. Do you remember that?
I do. I do.
Okay. So when you're going to give me an example as far as you're trying to say that it warrants attention, absolutely. I totally agree. But here's the thing. You also have to bring into the conversation the fact that there's too many guns out there, Raja. Is that a fact or no?
I've never taken that out of the conversation. As a matter of fact, Tio and I have frequently talked about the guns crossing state lines as well as easy access to some of these guns illegally from southern suburbs. That's constantly been something that we've talked about.
And when it comes down to the subject of guns, let's not forget that Texas is the number one state of trafficking guns from Texas to Mexico. Mexico's got a problem. They're killing the cartels are being armed to the teeth. Where are they getting those guns, Raja? From Texas. I know, because I'm from Mexico, and I've lived in Texas. And that's what I was asking. What did you, did you happen to collect any information on the guns and the violence and everything? Trying to find out where the guns come from when it comes down to Mexico. Comes from Texas.
That'll be my project for the next show. We got to hit this commercial break, and then we got a couple other callers coming up right after this.
Megan Financial is an independent retirement and financial services firm dedicated to the working men and women of organized labor. Megan provides straightforward, custom-fit financial advice and specializes in defined benefit and defined contribution pension plans, as well as participant and retiree health and welfare benefits. Megan Financial has the knowledge and experience to navigate the union member through all phases of life. Call 708-444-1090.
Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC. Member FINRA, SIPC. A broker-dealer and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Office location at 5321 South 94th Avenue, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462.
Ever wonder about the story behind the story? Who are the people you watch delivering the news, filming the scenes, and putting pen to paper to tell the story you read in your morning paper? Tune in to Media Essential Workers on Facebook and YouTube to find out. With constant changes in the Chicago media landscape, one reliable source keeps track of the people bringing you the stories. Media Essential Workers, the premier live stream telling the story of the storytellers. Sunday nights at 7. Like, subscribe, and follow Media Essential Workers to find out about special shows during the week. Hosted by Raza Siddiqui, Media Essential Workers gets the story of the storytellers.
Against the Grain with Tio Hardiman and Raza Siddiqui. Tio is actually up in Kenosha and doing the work of being the boots on the ground and training people to be violence interrupters, work that he takes very importantly. So I'm kind of manning the helm here. We had a couple of callers. We have Greg Hart, who's a DuPage County Commissioner, and Ginger, who is actually with the East Branch DuPage River Trail, who are joining us for a conversation today. We have Debbie, who's been waiting quite a bit for us. So Debbie, you're on with Raza Siddiqui, Ginger, and Greg.
Hi. Yeah, I've been waiting since the beginning of the show, since right after Mitchell called.
We appreciate your patience.
Well, it's running short, believe me, because of what I had to say as well.
Sure.
I think it's extremely irresponsible of you to allow this man, knowing his background, to speak time and again on your show. I can't believe you're that desperate for listeners.
Debbie, here's the thing, right? We live in a country that values freedom of speech and the right to articulate thought. So the fact that we can get out of our echo chamber once in a while and invite listeners who will not only maybe
maybe challenge our way of thinking, but maybe present a unique perspective is nothing that you should be maybe holding someone accountable for or trying to shame them for, but maybe learn to articulate your thoughts in terms of what it is that you find so objectionable. So I know your patience is running low. What do you have to say?
Excuse me?
Go ahead.
Excuse me.
Anytime.
But I think that this is not an opinion. I think that this is dangerous. It's like Biden said the other day, Facebook is killing people. Fox is killing people with all this misinformation. Do you not think that somebody's going to go out and take handfuls of zinc after what they just heard today? Because people aren't that smart to look things up and study about it.
Debbie, you may have been a little preoccupied with taking your notes as to what the caller said, and not so much when I told people and advised people to listen to their doctors before exercising any of these remedies that were stated on air.
That was your last statement, but that means nothing after this man has spewed on and on his crap about this stuff. It's irresponsible of you. Everybody on all the other stations know him and know that he spews all this garbage and challenge him. Ricky Hendon used to scream at him. Joan Esposito cuts him off. You let him go on? I think it's irresponsible of you. Thank you for taking my call.
Anytime, Debbie, and we'll take the call of anyone who decides that they want to speak with us, and we'll challenge them as needed, which we did with the last caller who she was so upset that we took. We have Margaret waiting for us. Margaret, you're on Against the Grain.
Hello?
Hey, Margaret, you're on Against the Grain. Greg and Ginger.
Hello?
Raza. Hey, can you hear us? And we are always willing to take any call where we can actually make that connection and talk. One of the things I do want to talk to you about, Greg, because we got about 6 minutes here left. Tell us about, you talked about some of the money coming in to DuPage County with the American Rescue Plan.
That's correct.
I'll be honest with you, didn't know so much about it. I've heard of, obviously, the PRO Act and everything else. Could you tell us a little about what this means for DuPage?
Yeah, of course. So the American Rescue Plan was a piece of federal legislation that was passed in recent months to help local governments, including counties, respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. Some of us may be familiar with the CARES Act. This is the latest installation of federal support. So one of the things that DuPage County will be receiving is a little north of $170 million from the federal government that we have to then prioritize into putting back into public health, into economic stimulus and small business support, and any infrastructure improvements that we see. So one of the most important topics I believe the county board is debating over the next few months will be how do we spend that money. We do have 4 years to spend it versus till the end of the year like we did with the CARES Act, but it's a big effort from the county board simply, and a big opportunity for us to determine the best way to spend those dollars.
So those dollars, does it look like any resolution will be reached before the elections, or is it going to be one of those things where you kind of wait to see what the next administration
is? No, we're definitely going to at least begin the process of how we spend it and divide it. I'm sure some of the dollars will be spent after the next election, but we're going to find out what our priorities are. We've already started discussing that in our finance committee, and we'll be making some decisions on how to do that fairly soon.
Well, fantastic. Yeah. Ginger, anything you want to say to wrap up as we head out of the program today?
Well, hearing that infrastructure and $170 million, I think you said, I was like saying maybe some of that could be allocated towards getting the East Branch DuPage River Trail constructed. That would be really awesome.
It would be great. And it would also be great to get federal funding for it as well, because like we said, there's a lot of different stakeholders involved, and it's always good to have more support than less. So,
But
I'm committed to it. I know you are, Ginger, as well, and I'm proud
Absolutely.
To be partnering with you.
I think trails are really good for our community. They're good for our mental health. They're good for our frame of mind, and just they all are all good, and everybody likes them, and they increase home values, and
right.
It's just a real win-win-win for everybody.
Well, fantastic. And as we kind of conclude coming out of the show, I do want to remind everyone that next week, talking about getting out of the silo, out of the echo chamber, we have a Republican candidate for Governor Darren Bailey coming on. I want to remind our listeners that we try to get people from all sides. We had T.O. Hardiman actually interviewed one of the Democratic candidates who's actually going to be trying to primary Governor Pritzker. So these are going to be some important and good shows that I think are definitely worth listening to. We always remind you, you may not agree with us, but at least let's have that dialogue going. Let's keep everything going. Just real quick, Greg, I want to ask you this. I know you're fairly new on this committee, but you are on the collective bargaining committee.
I am.
I bet you deal with a lot of back and forth on that. How's that kind of treated you?
It's going well. We are an ad hoc committee, so it meets a little less frequently than the other committees do, and it's more focused on when there is a collective bargaining issue that we have to address. But I've long been supportive of our partners in the trade unions. There's a lot of great work that we do together with DuPage County. You're talking about transportation. That's one of the sectors that we work closely with, and that's a very important committee that I'm proud to serve on.
Well, very cool. Yeah, being a union photographer myself, a union vice president, I've always been very interested in that. So when I was kind of looking over your bio, I was like, I've definitely got to ask about this.
Absolutely.
So we are very happy to have been able to bring this with T.O. Hardiman, working in Kenosha for Violence Interrupters, training you Violence Interrupters. We hope you join us next week. We remind you that you can follow us on Against the Grain with T.O. Hardiman, Raza Siddiqui on social media, so we keep the conversation going there. And we will talk to you next week. This is Raza Siddiqui signing out.